With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me on the show today is a very special guest, Raptors 905 lead assistant and Guelph Nighthawks coach and general manager, Charles Kissy. Coach, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So before we get into anything else, I wanted to kind of get to know you and the listeners to get to know you. You got obviously a very, very impressive title. Take us through your career from your days of playing at McMaster to now being with the 905 and the Nighthawks. Like, how did you get here?
It's a good question. I've been very fortunate. I played basketball at McMaster, graduated, and then moved into policing. But while I was doing that, I was a community coach. So I coached with the Scarborough Blues. That was my sort of first coaching opportunity with the Scarborough Blues team, and a great organization, and they were awesome. And so I coached the girls team from grade 9 to grade 12. They all graduated and moved on. And then I got an opportunity with Ryerson under head coach Sandy Poitier at the time as an assistant. So that was my first sort of, foray into, university basketball, or sort of a higher level of basketball. I did that for a year. And in that year, Sandy had actually was diagnosed with cancer. So she had to take a leave. And so I took over the job, as you can imagine, after, a year of just learning. I was learning so much from Rob, who was an assistant there, Rob Wright and Georgia. And I was just trying to figure it out even as an assistant, and what this league was about, and all the prep and scouting, all the things that went with it. I was thrust into a head coaching job. Right. Which was interesting because people say, when I hear them speak and people ask me, lots of different coaches ask me about being ready. It's kind of like having kids. I don't know if you're ever really ready. You just figure it out. You just go in and do it and you get that experience. That's the way you learn. So, I did that for 2 years. And then from there, I took another coaching job or coaching position in Waterloo while I was working in Toronto Tri-County Thunder, a girls team out there. And then while I was doing that, I got a Raptor internship. I was busy. I was driving all over the place.
I was going to say, how are you doing all this?
To Waterloo. I was just doing whatever to just try to learn and get better and figure it out, right? I mean, I know people say it now, and I'm sure everybody's heard lots of coaches say it now, but head coaching experience is invaluable, and you have to get it and just make those mistakes and, sort of grind through it. And it doesn't really matter what level you're doing it at. Just get as many reps as you can. So that's what I was doing. That turned into an opportunity, obviously, with the Raptors and under Dwayne Casey at the time. And then that turned into a head coaching job on the men's side at Brock University, where I spent 5 years building that program, to sort of ending with a national tournament appearance. And then from there, I went to the Raptors 905. Where I've spent the last 2 years.
So just a very straightforward path,
I guess so.
No detours, nothing.
No detours, no disappointments, no nothing, just part of the deal.
Was it always your goal to, get into coaching? Like what drew you to coaching in particular? Obviously you mentioned you played a lot of basketball. I tried looking up a little bit of your McMaster career just to get a sense of what you were like as a player, but obviously, you had the passion for the game. Like, was it always your goal to get into coaching? And what specifically drew you to that?
Nothing. You didn't miss anything in my career. My team was really good.
Oh, come on! I heard you guys won like 2 championships or something. That's pretty good.
We got to the national tournament.
Okay.
And we're upset a few times, I had a great team. I had a great leaders. Obviously, Joe Razzo was a great coach. Yeah, it wasn't basketball coaching. If you had asked me then, hey, do you want to be a basketball coach? It wouldn't have been on my list of things to do. I had a list, to be honest, of things to do. But coaching basketball was not one of them. It was teaching that was the sort of the catalyst for it, right? I wanted to teach. Mm-hmm. And as I fleshed out what that teaching looked like, it sort of just appeared. I think it was probably year three with Scarborough that I realized that, you know, year three or four, my third or fourth year with them, that was like, you know what, maybe I should explore this a little further because I am teaching. Mm-hmm. You know, I finally sort of discovered that I wasn't coaching basketball per se. I was teaching a game in life through sport and all these other things that I quickly realized were so much more valuable than just simply the orange round ball. So I got, you know, sort of fortunate to make that realization and understand that, hey, if there's an opportunity for me to teach, which is what I was most interested in, you know, I would take it and do it. And so far, so good.
That's awesome, man. That's really awesome. Now, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you had the chance to be in the Apprentice Coaching Mentorship Program under Dwayne Casey. This was back in 2012, 2013. What was that experience like for you, and sort of what stood out to you about the way Casey and his staff coached, and like, what did you take from that experience just being around a pro team?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I think as you move to different levels, you realize how little you actually know, you know, and okay. I think that's probably the same everywhere. Uh-huh. You know, you think you got it figured out, and then you go to a different level and you're like, oh my goodness, I got to start over almost, right? Like, you know, not exactly, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it's just so much to learn. You know, I think that experience for me, just so much detail and so much, you know, detail and work, and, you know, it's a lot. And you wonder, people, you know, I don't know if people have an appreciation. I mean, the size of staffs are obviously big. And there's a lot of work to do. I mean, there's just stuff, there's so much, especially now with analytics and data, there's a lot that can be done. And there's a lot of work to do. So, you know, and that's just the way it is right now. And maybe that will change. Maybe it'll go back to simpler times. And
I doubt it, man.
You and me both. I doubt it. So, you know, we're continuing to progress. And so for me, it was like, what stood out was the amount of detail, the amount of work, how hard you need to work to really be good at it. You know, we obviously see the Raptors have had tremendous success. I mean, as much success as one could have winning a championship. But the reality is that's built over time, and that's, it's not like, you know, 1 year. I think even Coach Nurse, like, you know, being an assistant and sort of building up and all of his experiences help him to that point, right? And help him, you know, help get the team over the edge. And so, you know, for me, it was that. It was like the amount of work and detail and effort and, you know, all of the things that seem really obvious. But, you know, when you're at different levels, you know, it's hard to appreciate what's really going into, you know, the 48-minute game that you're seeing, right? There's a lot that goes into it, and it's hard to really appreciate if you don't see it.
Right, for sure. Now, so you get that internship, you know, it's a great thing to have in your resume. You obviously take a lot of experience from it. You get to Brock. And at the time, you take over a 4-win team. And within a few years, you magically turn that program into one of the best in Canada. And, you know, I guess what I really wanted to ask you was sort of like, what do you miss the most about coaching, you know, that team, that program, and even just coaching at that level, at the university level?
It's interesting. It's a double-edged one for me. I think, I miss the players. I think that's the obvious one. You miss a lot of times, you know, those relationships you have with the players, and not that they're all gone, but, you know, just the daily practices, you know, being in there with them and the war zone atmosphere, you know, you kind of miss that. You miss, you know, the conversations like in the office, you know, with the guys about things that have nothing to do with basketball, right? Life and relationships and all that kind of stuff. You know, road trips, just like, you know, some of the things that are more humane, I guess, than less about competition, right? You know, you miss, you know, watching these guys go through their struggles. Like, not that it's, you know, I just think it helps round them out, right? And you know, them figuring out, okay, I got a test tomorrow, and then I got, you know, a game on Thursday, and that whole balance as these young men are sort of figuring that out. I think that's, you know, you miss helping being a part of that process, right? And helping them grow and learn and develop into these young men. I think that's a big piece of it. I think that's definitely, I would say, is something that, that if I was going to go back, that's what I would look forward to, are those types of things, right? I mean, obviously, competition is what it is, but I'm still getting it. So I'm not, necessarily missing being on the court and that type of thing. But certainly the players in that aspect, I would say. And you know what? I'll give you one more thing, is probably we developed a really cool and rather unique to the current time atmosphere at Brock, as far as, fan base and energy on campus and those types of things. I think, after year one, I said a million times, I don't want to play in front of 200 people. Like, this is, let's figure this out. And so, eventually in a couple of years, we were playing in front of sold out gyms and in arenas, right, with thousands of people. So being able to build that and be a part of that building process, was fun, and it's neat because it's something that they still obviously use today, or maybe not this upcoming season with sports being canceled, but they will continue to use it as, as a sort of a piece, of their infrastructure, I guess, at the university, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, that's awesome. You always want to like take over something, and then, when you end up leaving from it, you want that situation to be better for your presence. And I think you can definitely say that about, your time at Brock. So how did you
get... We're caretakers.
Exactly, right?
Sorry, go ahead.
How did you get from Brock to the 905? Like, what was that process like? Was there like a recruitment? Who approached you, and what drew you to coaching in the G League?
Yeah, well, I'd say Jamma, was the first part, head coach. Okay. I think, obviously I'd had a relationship with him and known him a long time, and I have it's early a relationship with him, and so that was it. I mean, when he took over the job, him and I had a conversation about it, I was offered the opportunity, and a great one, and really two things. One, to be able to continue to grow as a coach at a different level, right? Continue to expand and challenge myself. Two, to be able to work with an unbelievable human being. He's just one of, I've said this to him for years, is, one of the best human beings walking the planet. And three, to be able to work within the organization that kind of gave me my first exposure to professional life. I thought that was kind of, fulfilling and interesting and neat. And to be able to do it at home, there's just not, the Raptors are so unique because they employ and obviously hire a lot of, Canadians, local, coaches. Right. And so I feel like that's relatively unique, because most teams, they have coaches that, maybe from LA and they're working in New York or whatever. Yeah. And so for me, I could be at home and do this job, and work for the premier organization in the league, and be a part of it. I think, for me, it was like an opportunity you just don't pass up.
Now, I hope you don't mind me prying, but you mentioned, you and Jamma have had this relationship going back a couple of years. Just tell me about that. When did you guys get to know each other? What was he like? You know what I mean? What was that history there?
All right, you're opening a can of worms here. So okay. There's an Oakwood Jarvis. I don't know if they would call it a rivalry, and they may have won a few games back in high school. You may have won a few games back in high school, but no, we just, the basketball community is small, right? Like, you just know each other, everybody in one way, shape or form. And it may not even be 6 degrees of separation, it might be three, right? We just kind of grew up. We played on a team together years and years ago. We played against each other once for sure at university when he was at UBC and I was at McMaster. We just one of the, we have mutual friends we had back then and now, friends of both of ours, but we just kept that relationship, going, and, follow each other's careers and support each other. I think all coaches should be doing, with other colleagues, and just, we're not all in competition all the time. I think that's an important thing. I think sometimes we have to, put that hat down and support each other and help each other through things. And so he was one of those for me that was, really supportive and through my career and helping me progress.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Now, with the Raptors, you know, Coach Nick Nurse, he doesn't really like to, you know, pigeonhole his assistants. He likes to give them all a turn, you know, coaching offense, coaching defense, or even coaching special teams, as he likes to call it. Is that kind of the same way for Jama? Like, is that how he approaches with the assistants as well?
Yeah, it's exactly it. We did that. You know, we had rotations where we would spend, I believe it was six games in a certain area. And then we, you know, we'd lock in the latter half of the year, but really gave you an opportunity to dive in and, you know, to be well, better versed in a certain area. It's easy and often, you know, especially in basketball, sometimes you get, you know, you get labeled, mm-hmm. we'll say,
yeah, definitely.
You know, the defensive coach or the offensive coach or whatever mm-hmm. it may be. And so, you know, I think it's, I believe it, and I think the Raptors organization believes it too. It's just, you know, get rounded and get to know all of it, and you know, and don't silo yourself, I guess, is the way to look at it, right? And so, yeah, Coach is pretty – he's really good at that, and we've spent a lot of – and we've even debated it back and forth in terms of, you know, the benefits of that perspective. But I think ultimately, you know, he's a groomer and a grower of people, and so – as Coach Nurse is, right? So they believe in that, and I think ultimately it works, and they've had obviously great success with it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Nurse is like the perfect example of this, right? Because for so long he was sort of he's the offense guy. He's gonna coach the offense. He's got all these ideas, you know. And then he takes over the team, and all of a sudden it's one of the best defensive teams in the league. And it's just sort of like, right. You know what I mean? Like,
right? Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and it's to the point of, you know, all I think through this pandemic, as you know, people have had some time, and there's been a ton of different basketball debates. There's always these debates about what's more important, offense or defense. Mm-hmm. And I always say you need both. Mm-hmm. And I think the Raps and other good teams prove that. You know, I think they just prove that you have to be balanced on both ends of the floor and be good on both ends of the floor, you know, in order to be successful at a really high level.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you know, this question I get asked a lot, just about, like, you know, the integration between the Raptors and the 905. Like, how much integration is there between the two franchises? Is there sort of like a directive that comes from the Raptors down to 905? Like, how does that process work in terms of just, you know, I guess even for the coaching staff, like, how much autonomy do you guys have, and how much do you guys try to adapt what the Raptors try to do?
I mean, I would say that you have a lot of autonomy, but I think Jama would say the same. I think the thing is this, though. I mean, you're trying to prepare ultimately players to play for the Raptors, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Or in the NBA, but ultimately for the Raptors. So, you know, you're not to deviate too much. I don't know how much sense that would make necessarily, right? Like, I mean, yeah, you can play around and you want to try things. But if we have O'Shea coming to us, O'Shea Brissett, mm-hmm. and or with us, and then having to go play with the Raptors, we want to prepare. We want to make sure that as close as possible, the stuff is the same, the stuff that he's going to see there, you know, he's going to run, the defensive tenets, all of that are the same. So he's not having to sort of, you know, shift mindsets back and forth, which he did this year. He had to jump back and forth quite a bit, right? Yeah. He didn't have to shift his mindset, but he certainly had to be up and down on an hour's notice, right? So, you know, part of our job, a major part of our job, is to prepare them to be ready to play, right? And to be able to go up there and play. Paul Watson's another example who got an opportunity, but think about it. If you know, he wasn't a two-way at the time, but if we had a completely different set of actions, let's say, mm-hmm. and then he became a two-way, yeah, could he figure it out? Sure. But is the transition and the learning curve a little easier for him, right, having the same and similar processes? Most definitely. So I think that's, you know, that's an important piece, and so that's why there's that sort of fluidity between both.
Now, you mentioned O'Shea. I mean, he's like the perfect example, right? The Raptors have a whole bunch of injuries. They got to reach down. Now, obviously, for you guys, it must be really tough to, you know, okay, one of our best players is not available today because the Raptors, you know, got an injury. That must be tough to deal with. But, you know, just for you, obviously, you know, you see O'Shea and you work with them and stuff like that. Like, what stands out about his game and sort of his approach to just the work and everything like that? And why do you think that's made him successful so far?
Well, you just said it. He works,
yeah.
Right? The kid works, and I mean to call him a kid. He's a grown man.
He's got a kid now.
He's an adult. He's a father, yeah. So he's not a kid anymore. But you know, he's a man that works. He just works really hard, and he wants to get better. He's extremely, extremely, and I hate to use this term, but he is coachable. Mm-hmm. Like, he's receptive to feedback and, you know, and again, part of our job is to help him through this process, and he's been exposed to some great things, and he's done well for himself because he just is committed to learning and he's committed to growth and his own development. And so that's what stands out about him. He's just fully committed. There's not like this crazy ego that goes with it. It's just like, how do I get better? What can I do? You know, he does all the simple things that I think we are starting to take for granted, mm-hmm. right? Because we see these players with such high levels of skill. And we just assume sometimes maybe that we teach these one or two moves, they'll be there too. And
yeah.
it just doesn't work that way. Yeah. You know, it just doesn't work that way. It's a process. And I think everyone's proven that now, but you know, I think he's just a committed young man, and so you know, he's had a great level of success because of it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought one of O'Shea's best moments this year was, you know, the Raptors get beat at home on Christmas. Okay, that sucked, but then they get to play the Celtics like 2 days after in TD Garden, right. And O'Shea comes in the fourth quarter. He gets in all these offensive rebounds to get extra possessions. You know, he has turns guarding Kemba, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. Like, it's tough, but he went into that game and he was fully prepared. He was ready. He did it. He did his job. And you know, I was clear that, you know, he's a guy who can defend and really, you know, just find ways to contribute. But in terms of development and things like that, are there specific areas that, you know, at the 905 that you guys are trying to focus and sort of grow and nurture with O'Shea's game?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, obviously all parts, I think understanding of the game. I know, you know, Coach Smith, Ryan on our staff spent a lot of time with him working on his shooting, which has improved tremendously. You know, I think he's just, you know, there's lots of different pieces of his game. I think his shooting was one. And like I said, Ryan spent a great deal of time working with him on that, and he's improved dramatically. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, nobody's sitting back on him anymore, right? Like, those days are over, and he ended those days pretty quickly. And that's the beauty of guys like that, right? It's like, okay, you're gonna sit back 5 feet and let me shoot the three, see me in a month, mm-hmm. you know, see me in 2 months, you're not gonna be doing that anymore, right? And so that's sort of the beauty of guys like him. He's just like fully committed, he's humble enough to understand, you know, where his weaknesses are, and he just goes after it and works on it. And I think, you know, I think that I'll say this about, you know, the Raps organization, they're loaded with players like that, mm-hmm. you know, loaded with players who are, you know, humble and ready to go. You know, and I think that's like important. It's an important piece. It's an extremely important attribute that, again, is something that I think is often overlooked because we focus so much on the skills and the, you know, but the skills can be developed. You know, the personalities and the character can be developed, but it's so much easier to develop those other pieces if you come in with the right mentality.
That's a great point, man. It reminds me a little bit of the Spurs, you know, back in the day when they used to say, I think Popovich used to say, you know, they want to recruit players who are over themselves. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think that's exactly it. I think the Raptors, I mean, you look at a guy like Pascal, right? Probably, you know, the number one option on the team. I mean, he always talks about how much he loves improving. He's like, I don't care if I miss these shots or everything like that. Like, it's all about the work. It's all about the progress. And failure sort of baked into it, and he loves the whole process. And I mean, I don't know if you can find a better success story in terms of just, like, hard work than Pascal and the way he's grown his game.
And Fred. I mean, look at Fred's too, yeah. Another great example of that. I mean, these guys are like, you know, super humble, clutch NBA players. Yeah. I mean, if you watch the playoffs, and you know what's been interesting about those guys? I'm talking strictly on a fan, if you're paying attention as a fan, you've gotten to watch them grow rapidly. You know, you've gotten to watch Fred's game evolve quickly. But on the inside, you know he's working. Mm-hmm. You know he's putting in that work to improve his game every year. And so it's been neat to see that as a fan. I mean, you got to be excited about seeing these guys continue to develop right in front of your very eyes. Terrence Davis, mm-hmm. like all these guys who are, you know, who are becoming fan favorites, but they're working and they're doing it. You know, the Raptors' development process is got to be the best in the league, you know, in terms of, you know, you're seeing these guys that people, you know, well, they were a second round draft pick or whatever, they have all these comments for them, but look at them now. Mm-hmm. They're NBA champs, and you can't ever take that away from them either, right?
Exactly. Now, you also got another guy this year, Paul Watson, you know, I believe he joined you guys sort of mid-season and things like that. You know, but he might be a little bit lesser known just because, you know, to Raptors fans, and there's a lot of the audience here, you know, he only got to play, I think, one or two games. But, you know, what stood out to you about sort of, you know, Paul's game and stuff like that? And it seems like he's also a guy where maybe a little bit of a late bloomer, but he's really come on strong now to the point where he's gotten a couple of NBA looks. You know, describe his game and sort of, you know, what stands out to you about it.
Yeah, it's just a lot of the same. So Paul joined the 905 staff team this year after Gemma and myself coached a team in the G League select team in Uruguay.
Okay.
This fall, and Paul was on that team. And we're impressed with all of the players we had on that team. You know, later on there was a move, and our GM, Chad Sanders, traded for Paul. And I know Gemma was, you know, Gemma and I both were huge fans. I mean, we ran a lot of the stuff we ran in the summer or in the fall with this team. Sorry, let me go back. We ran a lot of the 905 Raptor stuff mm-hmm. with this fall team, and Paul just flourished in it. You know, he was like unfazed by the new learning. He shot the ball really well. He just did everything really, really well. He fit into the system really, really well. So when we got him on the Raps team, on the 905 team, I don't know, it was a seamless transition. He just, you know, he kind of flew under the radar, I think, for a little bit. And people, it was probably like a high flying stock where people were like, okay, this is going to fall at some point. And it never did. You know, it never did. He shot close to 50%. He just kind of kept going. And then ultimately earned himself, a 10-day, I think it was Atlanta first, mm-hmm. yep. right? And then the Raptors obviously two-way'd him later. But I think, you know, he was somebody that was in the gym. He's just working. He's shooting. You know, he's working on his areas, his needs of improvement. You know, and he just is committed to it. Like, this is a guy that, you know, I think the one thing that people have to appreciate is that, you know, fit matters. You know, I think, you know, we look at players and say, oh, that guy's not very good. But maybe if he was in a different place, he could be extremely good. Maybe, you know, there's situations, and we think about it at all levels, where, you know, coaches or players or organizations, whatever it may be, club teams may not be getting the best out of that young athletic player or whatever it is, right? And that's not a knock on anybody. It's just that sometimes, you know, I had players at Brock that just I couldn't get the most out of them, you know, some players that I could. It's just that's what happens. And I think our job, our task as coaches is to try to get the most out of every player, not to just identify weaknesses necessarily and fix them, which is sometimes often a sort of a pretty easy mechanical approach, but to holistically look at somebody and think about, okay, well, what can I do to get the most out of them? Sometimes, and usually, and almost always, it starts with building relationships. But, you know, how can I tag onto this to get the most? And Paul was somebody that, you know, we were able to do that. You know, Gemma was able to do that because we did it, and now he's on a two-way contract, and now he's in Orlando with the Raptors. Yeah. I mean, it's like one of the greatest stories of the season, I think, because, you know, as far as, you know, guys that, you know, you think back even to like Derek Cook last year, who wasn't playing. You know, he got traded to from Northern Arizona to our team and just had a fantastic season, mm-hmm. right? And it's not like I'm not pumping our tires, or maybe I sort of am, but in a way, it could be the reverse. Like, right? It's all about a lot of times, you know, going to the right place that's the right fit and it has the right, you know, whether it's coaches or system or whatever, right? Because I think it all matters. And again, the opposite is probably true, but I think fit matters. And I think Paul found a situation for himself that really worked, that allowed him to play the way he thinks and believes. And we now know he's capable of playing. And I think people will see him, you know, thrive in the future in the NBA. I think he's going to have a really good career and you know, he presents well. He's got a lot of really good attributes that will serve him well moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know, you know, how the Raptors and I guess the 905 as well. I don't know how you guys find all these players, all these talented players. Like, people aren't looking, you know, looking for or whatever. Because if you look at Paul Watson, you know, obviously he's taking a step in his 3-point shooting, but, you know, shoots a three really efficiently now on a high volume. He's very athletic. He's got some really incredible dunks. And he's also like 6'8", and he defends. And he's humble. He's coachable. what's going on? Like, I don't know how you guys are all missing it. Maybe they're not all going down to, you know, Montevideo to go watch them or coach them or something. But yeah, it's really impressive. And I think another success story in that front is, you know, obviously everyone knows the 905 is this incredible program. You know, you have obviously Pascal and Fred, and to a lesser extent, you know, even Norm, DeLon, you know, Jakob Pertl. Like, there's many proofs of concept. But I think one of the coolest stories from the 905 is also a guy like Chris Boucher, who I believe you got a chance to, you know, to coach down there. I mean, he was what named G League MVP, Defensive Player of the Year. And now, obviously, you see him, you know, making impacts with the Raptors, like, you know, quite regularly this season. I think he's had a really nice year in terms of, you know, he played a big part in that 30-point comeback. You know, he played a big part in that win over against the Lakers on the road. Just how proud are you to just sort of see Chris and where he is now and sort of his development and his growth moving forward?
Yeah, I always refrain from using the word proud. Like, I'm, you know, somebody's, I use that for my children, I think. But no, it's just my own personal quirk. But I I'm extremely happy for him. I mean, our job is to help these guys, you know, we play a role in trying to help them achieve their goals, right? I mean, so they really put in the work. I mean, obviously we're working too, but they're putting in the work, and Chris put in the work, and he's figuring it out. And again, like, these are, you know, we forget these guys come in, they're 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Like, I mean, they're young, right? And so, you know, some of them have never had a job before, right? You know, all those little factors. And now this is their job. And, you know, there's money involved, there's pressure, there's all these different things that, you know, the majority of society will never understand. Like, and I'm not saying I feel bad for them in any way. I'm saying that it's a different type of pressure that, you know, that from, you know, from a relative perspective that, you know, it's hard for people to understand. So, you know, Chris is, I'm extremely happy for him because he's worked for it. You know, if you know Chris's background, he's understood real pressure in his life, right? He's understood real, you know, talking about, you know, feeding yourself, that type of pressure, not, you know, basketball pressure, but he's understood how to, you know, be resilient and figure out some of the things that you know, it takes to be successful in a rather unconventional way, but he's figured it out. And so, and he continues to figure it out. And that's part of our job is to help him figure it out, help him get there, help him try to develop some of the habits, help him try to, you know, develop the habits. When I say that, I mean, on and off the floor, help him, you know, develop some of the habits on the court that will make him successful. Hey, Chris, run really hard. Like, when you watch Chris play in an NBA basketball game, that guy is giving everything he's got, right? And so, you know, you have to help them realize that that's valuable. It's not just like scoring 30 points a game. I think O'Shea's figured that out, as you can see, right? Mm-hmm. You talked about the game the night in Boston, or, you know, after Christmas in Boston, where he's doing all the other things.
Yep.
And that's what makes him successful. He's not just, you know, putting the ball in the hoop and taking every shot. He's doing all the other little things, defense, offensive rebound, running hard, you know, setting screens, all the stuff that – that, you know, allows sometimes the bigger names to be successful. So, you know, I think that's what Chris has brought. And I think his energy is great. And he's obviously athletically gifted and he's continuing to develop. So I think it's fantastic for him. So I'm extremely happy for Chris and all the success he's had and all the success he'll continue to have.
Now, I was looking into this and I thought it was a bit of a funny coincidence that both the Raptors and the 905 are ranked second in defense this season. That can't be a coincidence. Are there sort of, obviously you spoke to sort of, you know, streamlining the process so that, you know, the communication is the same, maybe the terminology is similar, the systems are similar, but it's sort of like the similarities and sort of just how the mentality of both teams approach, you know, defending specifically.
I think, you know, defensively, yeah. I mean, I think that we're very much the same in that sense. I think you know, we have the same tenants without getting into details because Raps are trying to win another one. But, you know, we don't want to give any of those away. But I think, yeah, I think, you know, we have a lot of the same principles and so it makes it easy, right? It makes it easy. And I think, you know, again, you're talking about players going back and forth and so on and so forth. The best thing is to keep it simple and to keep it consistent. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing, and I give credit to the staffs for doing, is to keeping the athletes engaged, keeping the players engaged defensively, right? A lot of teams, and you see it, A lot of teams aren't engaged all the time defensively. I mean, I'm knowing what's happening and I'm watching the rap sometimes. I'm thinking, man, you know, like the genius of Coach Nurse and his staff is not just, you know, being creative and switching defense and switching offense and stuff like that. It's like getting them to play hard and buying in and doing that every night, every night, you know, like I say that and it sounds simple and people will say, well, they're getting paid millions. They should. I get it.
But still a job, you get know it, what I mean? Like, you know,
it's still a job, right? To get up every day, to be on the flight. To, again, not trying to make anyone feel sorry for these guys. It's just more that the consistency is impressive. And if you really, if you relate it back to anybody's normal job, you know, take it, well, we all have normal jobs, but you know what I mean? Like, if you take it to an office somewhere, does everybody work hard every single day, all the time that they're on the floor? Exactly. Like, that's what I'm talking about. And so, and the difference is too, we're not doing physical jobs, right? Like these are running up and down, banging around, shooting, like they're physical, very demanding jobs physically. When you wake up, I mean, most people have a hard time working out it 5 days in a row, right? And it's hard. And I'm not knocking anybody. That's like a real thing. I do. I'll use myself. I have a hard time doing it sometimes. So these guys are, you know, that's to me, that's the genius is that they've been able to get them to buy in on the defensive end night in and night out without issue. And they've, you know, thrived because of it.
Now, when it comes to defense for you guys, like, you know, how much do you incorporate analytics into sort of something like that? I'm not really sure how the analytics work, maybe at the 905 level. I know for the Raptors, they got all these fancy cameras and, you know, they're tracking everything. Like you take a shot in practice, someone, there's a data point somewhere. But like, just how much do you guys use analytics in your coaching process and sort of what's too much analytics and what's, you know, not enough analytics in your opinion?
Yeah, I think that's a tricky one, right? Because it's evolving. And so the thing I always say about analytics is this: it's a tool to help inform your coaching, right? I don't know if you necessarily coach because or through the analytics necessarily, right? It helps inform your coaching. It helps you make decisions. It doesn't necessarily always make the decisions for you, always, right? So I think, you know, you're out there, you're coaching a game and you have to make decisions. And I think, yes, you can use the data to inform the decisions that you're making without question. But there's a human element too, to the game that analytics maybe remove or don't account for or whatever. You know, like getting, as I just mentioned with coaches and the staff and our staff, for example, getting players to play really hard. Well, there's no like analytical, you know, number necessarily for that. And maybe there is that I'm not aware of, but that's something that you can't really account for in how somebody rebounds, or, you know, you can't account for in how somebody, you know, does anything really. So I mean, I think you use it as a tool, and I think, you know, we use it a lot, and obviously the Raps use it a lot. And I think it's an important tool to use. And I think you have to sort of find, because there's so much information, you got to really figure out how you want to use what points of information, because you can't use it all. It's just way too much data and information, you know, make most people's heads spin. And so we have to figure out a way to, you know, all teams, and we do too, like what's important to us. And we're constantly looking at certain things. Okay, I said, well, that doesn't really apply to us. Okay, let's get rid of it and use this, or let's start tracking this, or right, like in figuring that out. And I think that's an important process. And I think teams need to go, or player coaches or whatever level you're at, need to sort of go through that understanding of how are you going to apply this data to your team with your dynamics, the players that you have, and so on and so forth.
Right.
I don't know if that answered your question.
But no, I mean, that's totally fair. That's totally fair. And I think when you look into the numbers too, it feels like the more you look into it, sometimes there's like things that will contradict each other. You know what I mean? And I think the one thing with the numbers, it always seems like that is really objective. It's really cold, you know, stone hard truth, because that's just what it is. It's a number. But at the same time, we see trends happen in analytics, you know, and it changes. And all of a sudden, philosophies change in terms of, okay, for one day, it's like, look, it's never worth it to go crash the offensive glass. You got to get back in transition. Transition defense is the most important. Right. And all of a sudden now it's like, ah, maybe, you know, certain situations, this, this, and this, you can have more efficiencies. You can go get an offensive rebound. It maybe pushes everything forward. So I think especially, you know, with analytics, you just have to put into a lot of context in terms of who your team is, you know, who your opponent is, and sort of just the situation of, like, does it make sense? You know what I mean?
100%. And that's exactly what I mean. And thanks for saying it better than I did. I think, like, that's exactly what I mean. It's completely, you know, you could, one size doesn't fit all necessarily. Right. And so that's why it's, you know, we definitely use it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. I mean, I would almost suggest the Raps are sort of the leaders as far as analytics departments go, but, you know, but again, it's like, you know, everyone has to sort of figure out what works for you and your team and your organization or your style of play or whatever, right? I mean, I think it's completely, you know, different. Everyone, you look at Milwaukee, how they defend, mm-hmm. and, you know, for example, pick and rolls, and they sit in a drop and a deep drop with Brooke Lopez protecting the paint, and that's to protect the paint. Yeah. You know, on the other end of the shot spectrum, you know, the rim shot is the highest value, so they want to take that away, for example, right? So again, that's how they chosen to use that set of information. So again, it's certainly different and specific to everyone. And you really, context, as you said, matters. And you have to figure out who you are as a group and how you want to use it for your group, because you can't use it all.
Right. Now, you know, we talked a lot about the 905. Like, how much of this stuff do you take over to your job with the Nighthawks and you know, in terms of just, you know, your coaching philosophies, your experiences, obviously working with pro guys and moving over to the CEBL?
A lot of it. I mean, what's unique about this year's CEBL is that it's a tournament format, mm-hmm. right? 6-game round robin and then single elimination. So, I mean, at most you're going to have 9 games. You have a 1-week training camp. You don't there's not a lot of time. Yeah, it's crazy.
That explains why you're so busy.
Yeah. So you don't have a lot of time to build things in, or, you know, and you quickly have to decide what's important, what's not, what your ratios are. Like, this is where the offense defense conversations come into play. And you have to figure that out. So the one thing you certainly take is that your relationships are important. So you're trying to spend a lot of time building them now. Right. And then we get into, you know, training camp, the asks become a little bit easier, right. The demands become a little bit easier. So that's one piece. But yeah, I mean, I think you take it all, you just have to pare down, you know, in terms of your planning, what's important and what's not. Prioritize, I guess, is the term, right? You got to figure out, and that's what we're doing now, is just sort of prioritizing, you know, our training camp and what we're putting in and, you know, how we're teaching things and so on and so forth. Because, again, you got 6 days. It's kind of like Vegas Summer League,
yeah,
you know,
in many ways. I guess so. So
I'm glad I was exposed to that, because in many ways it very much is that. And so, yeah, so that's the process we're going through right now.
Now, you know, you're wearing both hats. You're head coach and your general manager. Like, what's that experience like? Like, that sounds like so much work.
It is. It's a crash course in figuring it all out, but it's been great. I mean, again, you know, experience is often the best teacher. And I think, you know, I'm getting to, you know, deal with agents, sign players, you know, negotiate contracts, you know, build teams, right? Yeah. Like I would have at Brock, but now there's a little more involved, mm-hmm. right? You know, and so it's a really interesting, you know, it's funny when I'm making decisions, I'm thinking about, you know, how, you know, for example, Raptors decisions would have been made. And I'm thinking about, oh, that decision was heavily criticized, but now I understand why they made that choice versus this choice, mm-hmm. right? Because you're having to, obviously not on the same scale, but in many ways, the same idea. So, at least, you know, I have the exposure and I have, you know, supports around, you know, to assist in the process. But honestly, it's been great to be exposed to that, because again, like, where, how else do you get exposed to it? Right. And so this is relatively unique to be able to do both, and to still keep the coaching hat on, but also have to, you know, run the team, you know, from a personnel and sort of, at least contractual budget standpoint. It's unique, it's different, and it's been really good.
Yeah, I'm getting the sense just from this conversation that you definitely have you're definitely an ambitious guy. You definitely love to throw yourself into the fire instead of adapt, and that's really admirable, man. Because, you know, that is the best way to grow, for sure.
I mean, how else can you, again, like for me, and that's not, it's not for everybody. For me, you know, if I wanted safety and security, I would have stayed in my other job. Yeah, exactly. You know, I think this, you know, as great as it was, I think this is, you know, this life is short and there's seldom opportunities to, you know, we don't always either get presented or able or have the resources to figure out how to create opportunities. And so, you know, I've been fortunate to continue to sort of navigate and try to stay ahead and try to, you know, figure out a path that works. Because I think the one thing that, you know, people I asked a lot of when I was years ago and probably still to this day sometimes is like, well, how did you get there, right? Like that type of thing. People ask me that same question. And the answer that I got from everyone is that, well, everyone's path's different, right? Like there is no direct line to any job in this world, right? Do X, Y, and Z and you'll get there. Like it just doesn't work that way. And so you have to, you know, be creative and figure out how you're going to do it. And sometimes that's, you know, coaching in Scarborough, then driving to Waterloo and then moving to Niagara to work at Brock. And then, you know, back to the Rats 105, like whatever the path is, you have to figure that out for you. And, you know, for me, I've never been too afraid of making those decisions and they're not easy ones for sure. But I haven't been too afraid of them and they've kind of worked out as far as my growth is concerned.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely say it's paid off for you so far. You know, when I took a look at your coaching staff with the Nighthawks, and you know, I was, you know, not to pat you on the back or anything like that, because I think it's sort of implied, but I think it was really important that, you know, you were able to sort of incorporate diversity into your hiring, into your staff, and it's something that, you know, I think with the Raptors, they've really taken a lead for this, right? You have Masai as the president of the whole organization, and he, you know, puts this extreme effort into, you know, extending opportunities, whether that's here in Canada, whether that's, you know, extending more opportunities to include more women into his program. You know, you have players coming from all over the world, but you also have general managers coming from all over the world and the very diverse staff and things like that. I mean, is that sort of the same approach that you've taken towards, you know, your staff? Obviously on a much smaller level in terms of hiring, but is diversity something that you try to keep in mind?
Yeah, and respectfully to the Raptors, not because of the Raptors, but because that's who I am in general. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think it's important that obviously the Raptors have done that. And I think that's, you know, unbelievable. And I think, yeah, I just think it's important to give people opportunities. I think that's what, you know, people are sort of fighting for. I don't think people are asking for more opportunities than other people. I think people are asking for equal opportunities, mm-hmm. you know, in many ways. So, you know, I've always been a believer of that. You know, I think we could do better as far as sport organizations in this country. Let me go back. I think we need to do better as far as sport organizations in this country, specifically, but obviously in other areas as well. And building my staff, it was deliberate. It was, young, old men, women, like, you know, trying to figure out as much as I could have. I mean, I have the biggest staff, I think, in the league right now. And so you can only hire so many people, but trying to do my best to keep it balanced, because that balance perspective and approach is important. I believe that, you know, I think, you know, different voices creates different perspectives and thoughts that we might not have thought about from different lenses. Right. And I think that's important. And I think representation is important. I think it's important to see for a young, you know, female to see Wumi Agumbiade, who's on our staff, to see her in that role and to think, hey, that'd be neat. Maybe I can do that one day. And then I know there are other examples, but context then becomes important. So in Canada, there's not that many examples, right? And in Ontario, there are very few examples. So, you know, I think that becomes important. It was important, you know, to have that. It was important to have Arslan from Pakistan, you know, like on the staff. And, you know, again, that balance, as much as you can do it, because again, I could only hire so many people, but I think that balance is important. I think it's a responsibility. Let me say it this way. I've always thought this, it's a responsibility for coaches or people, and I'm speaking specifically to coaches, but for anyone in position of power to balance out their staff that way. And it's not like you have to hire a black guy or you have to, but you have to be aware that multiple lenses is important. Yeah. Just like you would assign somebody to defense and somebody to offense and somebody to whatever, right? It's a different, you're asking them for a different lens. And so sometimes, you know, that cultural lens or the, you know, the whatever the lens may be, the socioeconomic lens, whatever it is, allows you to do what I said was important at the beginning, those relationships. And it may allow you to connect with the player, or, you know, you never know what the outcome may be. But I think ultimately there's value in it. And we have to see the value, and we have to not only see the value, then do something about it and recognize that, hey, there's a need for, you know, better balance for in all of our sport organizations and all of, and that's from top to bottom, not just at the coaching level, but like I talk a lot about, you know, administrators, for example, in the OUA, you know, in the Ontario League, the University League, you know, there's no ethnic or racial diversity in amongst those ranks, and that needs to change, right? That we need to figure that out, and we need to understand that that impacts those below, the coaches who may have issues, or the players who then may have issues and have to run it up the chain. You know, there's impacts there that are, you know, dramatic. Sorry to deviate too much, but like there are impacts that are dramatic, and I think we have a responsibility to make sure that we are balanced in our approach in hiring. And so that was my intent moving into Guelph.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, just speaking from my own experience, you know, when you come to this country as an immigrant, like, you know, I think part of your responsibility now that I've come here as a child, you know, I'm now in the workforce and stuff like that, just keeping that door open so that there's more opportunities for other people. You know what I mean? Like it can't be a situation where you come here and then you close the door. You know what I mean? Because that, you know, that shouldn't be the way it works. And I think, you know, if you see the value in sort of the way, and if you appreciate the way that you've been able to, you know, come through and everything like that, I think everyone who has that perspective is able to try to do the same. Now, I just got two more questions for you before I let you go, man. You know, you started this podcast called Talk About It. What's your goal with the podcast, and what sort of messages or conversations are you trying to get out there?
Yeah, thanks for asking about that. I mean, the goal of the podcast was education, right? I think that's like, you know, a pivotal part of our society figuring out some of our issues. We have to start educating ourselves. I think that's a huge part of it. And especially when we're having these conversations, because that's another important piece. You know, it's easier, it's better for all of us to be doing it from an informed standpoint. And so the podcast that, you know, I started was about, I said this earlier, it was kind of like the Wire format, okay, right?
So every episode focuses on a different theme. Every episode, okay.
Exactly. So for us, though, or for me, I've done two episodes per theme. So two in education, you know, there'll be two in media. The one we just released with Donovan Bennett, Michael Grange will be coming out next. There'll be two in sports. So we'll have two athletes. Dwayne Notice is one, and Shanice Marcel, who's a professional beach volleyball player, Canadian. And then we'll go into the legal world, okay, the justice system, okay, right? And then business, right? And we'll look at sort of systemic issues of race in those fields, right? In those areas. And I think, you know, and we could do more. I just started and said I was going to do 10, but because this is not my, you know, not my thing, but it's an important thing. And I think education is my thing. So this is the platform I'm using. And so, yeah, I've been able to sort of dive in and tackle some of these issues with our guests who have been tremendous so far, and it's gotten great feedback. And again, it's called Think About It with Charles Kissy. So you can look at it, find it on Spotify or Apple or any of the sites that you choose to use. But yeah, it's really just looking at, you know, the fact that, you know, I think one of the areas of, I don't want to call it concern for me, but was the idea of limiting the idea of racism to the police alone. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting that there isn't racial issues with the police. Of course there are. We can see that. But the idea that that's the only place it comes from, to me, was a little bit absurd. Mm-hmm. And so to not tackle some of the other areas that we have some tremendous issues was going to be a missed opportunity, in my opinion. So, you know, and not just in terms of calling people out. That's not what this is. This is more, you know, this is more identifying and talking about and trying to address, you know, some of the issues in the media? How do we broadcast sports? How do we talk about, you know, the athletes mm-hmm. in sport? How do we, you know, those types of things if we're talking about sport, if we're talking about media? And what are some of the barriers and issues? And I end every podcast with a small, medium, large concept in terms of how do we figure this out? How do we start to solve? What can people do to start the process of you know, change? And so, you know, this podcast is really about education, and it's really to get people thinking mm-hmm. and to get people talking and to help inform people. And then you kind of go from there. But I think education is a tremendous starting point, you know, and it really will help drive some of the conversations that have been happening everywhere in homes and offices, at, you know, at coffee, yeah. I guess not anymore, but over Zoom, I guess, and all these other places, you know, amongst families, amongst friends. You know, we have to really get to know what the issues really are and not just limit it to the police, include the police, but not just limit it to the police, because I would argue that, you know, streaming, for example, in a high school yeah. has yeah. generational impacts, can have generational impacts, socioeconomic impacts, right? Could keep a kid out of university who might want to be a lawyer or whatever, mm-hmm. right? You know, it could have other impacts that will last as long as somebody being stopped by the police.
Yeah.
I know that's going to sound controversial, but it's the reality. Like not giving, denying people access to education in different ways, by suspending them at higher rates, for example, and so on and so forth, can have impacts that are as great as mm-hmm. other areas. So I think that was part of it. And let's sort of be aware of how, you know, because I think people thought, well, it's the police and we're all immune. We're okay. It doesn't exist in our world. Mm-hmm. Well, no, it does exist in your world. And here are the impacts, right? Here are some of the ways it does exist. But along with that, here's how we can start to, you know, here are some ideas about how we can start to not only move the conversation forward, but start to solve some of the issues, right? I think, you know, although it's been done before, you know, removing the idea of streaming, as happened this week in Ontario, is a great That's start. Fantastic. I know it's happened before and it was brought back, uh-huh. but at least we're back here and we're in a place that, okay, now it's removed. And I don't know if people have an understanding of the barriers. I know that almost happened to me in grade 9, you know? Right. And again, you know, thank goodness.
I was going to say, look at you now, man, you got a master's degree and everything.
Yeah. It's crazy when you heard, you know, teachers say, well, you're not, you know, maybe university is not for you or any of those types of things that, you know, those little microaggressions that you hear about all the time. And we could do a whole episode on that alone. Mm. But yeah. And then, you know, all these years later, you end up with a master's degree. You probably have more education in some ways than others, right? Like you just, but those are the realities. We're all capable of learning and we're all capable of once learning, then applying our learning, all of us. And so that's what this podcast is about. It's about teaching and helping people learn and helping people think about things differently. And I say, I'm not always trying to change people's minds, but I'm helping you, you know, maybe reframe or think about what you already think in a different way. You know, if you want to be racist, great, but just think about it differently. And maybe it'll change your perspective. Maybe it'll help you help open your mind up to a different way of viewing what you believe. And maybe it won't, and that's okay too, but at least you'll be having the conversation.
Yeah, for sure. No, listen, I've heard the podcast. It's fantastic. I'm looking forward to the rest of the episodes. Definitely. And then finally, you know, what are some of your favorite memories from being in that Raptors championship parade float? I mean, I read into your history a little bit. You know, so you grew up in the city. You grew up downtown as well. That has to be a surreal experience, man, to be on there for 5 hours and see everybody. What was that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've said this to a number of people. Like, you know, as a guy who grew up downtown in Regent Park, if you told me, you know, 30 some odd years later, I'd be on a championship float, you know, I would have laughed. Huh. And so it was unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It's something that I'll never forget. You know, and obviously extra special for me personally, just, you know, being from Toronto, mm-hmm. watching the team sort of form and develop, and, you know, back in the Damon Stoudemire days.
Okay.
You know,
just, all right. So you're a day one fan, yeah, everything like that. Okay. I mean,
that was it, because, you know, before that, we obviously, you know, we had the Bulls and the Knicks and those rivalries, yeah, yeah. And it was cool to see the documentary come back, The Last Dance. But yeah, you mean I've been a Raptor fan, you know, since the beginning, and then getting to now work with the organization and be a part of that is, like, you know, it's just incredibly, incredibly special for sure. Yeah, the parade was a lot of fun. It was really neat. I mean, you had these moments where you're looking down Richmond or Richmond Street, or you're looking down Wellington or King, and you're just seeing seas of people, you know, supporting. And it's just like, wow, you're reminded very quickly of the power of sport and what we can do and how we can bring people together. And that's like the true value of all of this, right? And that's why it's neat to have, you know, Masai Ujiri as leader being able to speak on a number of different topics, because the job has been done as far as getting people to listen. And so now the voices need to be out. And so, you know, sitting in that parade and listening to, or watching, or even listening, I'd say, to the cheers and looking up and watching, you know, in the buildings, you're seeing just like littered with people. It's surreal. I mean, I can't wait for that to happen again. Yeah. You know, it's just, it's such a really neat, and an overwhelming feeling, you know, and thinking and wishing, and I'm sure everybody was, man, I wish everyone could be on this bus right now.
Yeah,
you know,
bro.
I wish, you know, I wish everybody could experience this once, because it's unique and it's different. Nothing I take for granted, for sure. Mm-hmm.
For sure, man. That's it's a great way to end the show. It's such a positive vibe, for sure. Coach, thank you. You've been so generous with your time. You know, congratulations on everything you've accomplished so far, and best of luck in your career going forward, man.
Hey, thank you for having me, and this was awesome. I appreciate your time.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.